All right, so we are ready to go. This is Bio 231, and it is November 3rd. And I did not upload the last lecture just yet because I forgot to turn my recorder off after class, and so I was speaking to everybody, and I had a really long personal discussion with my boss, the dean, and unbeknownst to him, I was recording the conversation. No, just kidding. But anyway, so I got to go back and edit that out. And I'll put it on the web for you. But today's recording should be just fine. Well, what you've been seeing up over here, all right, is a mock practicum, and some of you are going to be taking a practicum this week or next week on nervous system dissections and eyeball. And so these are just a bunch of pictures, and I emailed everybody what the website is, so you can go there. And if you want to download these pictures, you're welcome to do that. You can look at all the different figures right here, or you can play them in that slideshow mode or film strip mode and look at each of them individually, for instance, one at a time. Okay. And the way this works, go to that website and then click Learning Modules. And so here we see heart figures, for instance, geriatric skull, don't do too much with that anymore. But here's eye figures, brain figures. This is the one that you were looking at. And you notice that there are three different columns on one row. The brain blank answer sheet. So you can, this is just a Word document you can download and print out, and this just has lines, just like the piece of paper that you get in lab. And you can then watch the slideshow, fill out your answers for what the probe is pointing at. And then here's the answer key, and then you can go ahead and grade your answer sheet after you fill it out. And of course, you can do this any number of times that you want to. Now, of course, this works really well for pictures, but remember, during the practicum, it's going to be the actual structure. So you still have to get to lab. You got to learn that information, how it looks with a 3D specimen. And then if you want to review, you can go to pictures, and that's helpful. But you can't really prepare for a practicum just by looking at pictures. Right, because a two-dimensional object just doesn't translate very well in our minds as when you get in and you take a practicum that's actually a 3D specimen. So this is good for review, but don't place a lot of emphasis on it. Okay. All right, so does anybody have a question about this? Don't forget, just go to Learning Modules and then pick what kind of figures you want to look at. Okay. All right, so we finished up last time with the peripheral nervous system, okay, and we're going to go on to the autonomic nervous system, and this is from the very first introductory lecture that we looked at, and you've already been tested on this nervous system, but this is just an overview of the nervous system, how to break it down. So let's just review and see where we are. So what are the two main divisions of the nervous system? You got central and peripheral nervous system, and the central nervous system is made up of the brain and spinal cord, right? And so last time we started looking at the peripheral nervous system, and in particular, mostly, it was the sensory or afferent division, right? And actually, we looked at some motor division. Anybody remember a cranial nerve that has a motor component to it, a cranial nerve? Vagus has a motor component. Where does the vagus nerve go to? It goes to, close, that's a phrenic, it goes to the diaphragm, okay, but it goes to the heart, and we're going to look at the vagus today, again, when we start talking about the autonomic nervous system, okay, so don't forget your cranial nerves and your mnemonics, and then also remember cranial nerves can either be sensory, they can be motor, or they can be mixed. What's the mnemonic for remembering which cranial nerve is sensory, motor, or mixed? Yeah, say real out loud, really loud. Who's saying that? Okay, yeah, some say money matters, but my brother says big brains matter most. Okay? So there are different ways that you can say it, but that will help you remember which cranial nerves have what kind of functions. Okay, so don't forget sensory is afferent. All right, and when we're going to look today at the motor or efferent division, all right, that can be broken down into somatic, and remember that just means voluntary, that's under your voluntary control, and today is autonomic. That means that these nerves are going through your viscera. And viscera just means your internal organs in body cavities. Like, give me an example of a visceral organ. Liver. Yeah. Pancreas. Stomach. Heart. Okay. Urinary bladder. These are all visceral organs. All right. And the nice thing about after today's lecture, we're going to start looking at some of those visceral organs. All right. So the rest of the class we're going to spend on the respiratory system, digestive system, and things like that. All right, so the autonomic nervous system can be broken down into sympathetic and parasympathetic. All right, so we said that somatic goes to skeletal muscle. What are the effector organs in the autonomic nervous system? You should have that on the tip of your tongue, too, just generally speaking. What are the effector organs for the autonomic nervous system? Glands, smooth muscle, and cardiac muscle. So those things you don't have control over. As a matter of fact, what is the only thing in your whole body that you do have control over? Skeletal muscle. Yeah, I was really disappointed when I realized that, but that's true. That's the only thing you really have voluntary control over. So autonomic nervous system goes to smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands. They take care of themselves. Okay, we can play some tricks with that a little bit. For instance, I could say, okay, put your books away and let's take a pop quiz on peripheral nervous system, cranial nerves right now. Okay? And what happened to your heart rate? It probably increased, okay? But that's just a little trick that you can play on yourself. It's not anything that you can voluntarily do, right? You have to do some kind of meditation or be tricked in order to control your heart rate, or through meditation. All right, so the autonomic nervous system, so let's switch to the autonomic nervous system. It controls involuntary or self-governing systems of the body, such as blood pressure. You have no idea what your blood pressure is, but your body is taking care of it all the time. And does anybody know a pathology involved with blood pressure? Is there a pathology? An important pathology? A significant? High blood pressure. That's right. We call that hypertension. All right, so the autonomic nervous system is involved in regulating your blood pressure, your heart rate, which we just manipulated a little bit, digestion, respiration, urination, sweating, pupil dilation, and numerous other functions, right? Everything else except for skeletal muscle, all right? And it does all that just by controlling smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands, those three effector organs. All right, so let's compare the somatic motor pathway with an autonomic motor pathway. And you're familiar with somatic motor already. The somatic voluntary pathway consists of just a single bipolar neuron, actually a single multipolar neuron. The cell body is located in the ventral horn of the spinal cord gray matter, and its axon is myelinated, terminates on the effector organ. So let's see what a picture of this kind of looks like. All right, so here is a slide that compares the neuroanatomy of a somatic motor pathway as well as autonomic. So let's just refresh our memories. What is somatic motor? What is the effector organ for somatic motor once again? You see a skeletal muscle up there anywhere? Absolutely. Kind of looks like biceps or brachialis or something. So here is just that multipolar neuron. We see the cell body in the, what horn is this? Ventral horn. This is the ventral horn, gray matter. And it's going to leave, what is this structure right here? That's the ventral root. And what could you tell me about the ventral root? There's something interesting about it. What's the function of the ventral root? It's the way that signals leave the central nervous system. What do we call that? That's motor or efferent, right? And the ventral root is 100% efferent. There are no sensory signals that enter the central nervous system through the ventral root. Okay, so here we have a motor neuron, a somatic motor neuron, leaving the ventral root, going into the spinal nerve, and it's going to find its way all the way to wherever this skeletal muscle is, even though that little skeletal muscle might be in your big toe someplace. It still takes how many neurons to get from the spinal cord to that muscle in your big toe? Just one. It goes all the way there. So this neuron, even though it's microscopic in diameter, you can't see it. It still could be a meter long. It still could be macroscopically long. It just goes all the way carrying a nerve impulse to this neuromuscular junction, which is going to cause this muscle to contract. And don't forget, the skeletal muscle can never make up its own mind if it's going to contract or not once it gets a signal from its motor neuron. It just automatically contracts. All right, so that's a somatic pathway. An autonomic pathway is quite a bit different. Oh, I tell you what is the neurotransmitter at the neuromuscular junction? Acetylcholine. That's right. It is always stimulatory, like I said. It's going to cause muscle contraction. All right, let's contrast and compare, actually, as well with the autonomic pathway. So the cell body is in the lateral horn of the spinal cord gray matter. All right, it's not in the ventral horn. And this is a nice multipolar neuron. And it leaves through the ventral root, because the ventral root is always motor. And as a matter of fact, what can you tell me about the dorsal root? Could a motor neuron ever leave the dorsal root? No, because it just never has ever happened that way, right? Motor signals always leave the ventral root. All right, and it stops on its way to an effector organ, where there is a nice synapse. So, and here is the cell body of the second neuron. And when you have a group of nerve cell bodies someplace in the peripheral nervous system, we give that a special name. What do we call a group of nerve cell bodies and also dendrites in the peripheral nervous system? That's a ganglion. And so you would agree this is peripheral nervous system? Yeah, because it's outside the spinal cord. All right, so this is a nice synapse. And now here is a second cell that's going to carry that information or relay the information all the way to the effector organ of an autonomic nervous system, which is smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, or glands, right? Okay. Well, let's go back to this somatic motor neuron. We see that it looks like a string of pearls right here. Why is that? Because it's myelinated. What does that mean? What does it give that neuron? What kind of function? Saltatory conduction, or very fast speed of conduction of a nerve impulse. Now let's look at these two neurons in this autonomic pathway. Notice that the first one is myelinated, but what about the second one? It's non-myelinated, so it's slower, okay, compared to this one. So for an autonomic pathway, we almost always have two neurons back to back, and the first neuron, or the proximal neuron, we call this the preganglionic fiber, because we see it before the ganglion. And then this one is what we call the postganglionic fiber, because it comes after the ganglion. So all autonomic pathways consist of two neurons back to back. Whether it is sympathetic or parasympathetic, it really does not matter. And this synapse right here is the usual kind of synapse. Now, can anybody remember what the two general kinds of synapses are in the body? Two general kinds. There's one that's very common, and there's one that's not very common. Yeah, chemical versus electrical. This is the very common kind. So this is a chemical. And when it's a chemical synapse, how is information carried across the synapse? As a chemical signal, and that chemical signal we call a neurotransmitter. Okay. Now, what I haven't told you so far is what the neurotransmitter is at all autonomic ganglia. It is acetylcholine as well. Okay. So I think you have another slide in your book someplace later on that shows that this neurotransmitter that's moving across the synapse is acetylcholine, just like at the neuromuscular junction. Yeah? Oh, we're going to look. It has special places. It has special places, and then there's a little bit of difference between whether it's the parasympathetic nervous system or the sympathetic nervous system. It's a little bit different. So we're going to look at that too. That's going to be important to look at. Okay. And then a nerve impulse comes down the postganglionic axon, and this is another kind of chemical synapse. But the neurotransmitter on the effector organ is not acetylcholine. It switches. And now it is norepinephrine, right? So, and that is true for the sympathetic nervous system. If this is sympathetic nervous system, this neurotransmitter is going to be norepinephrine. All right, so this fiber looks white, this fiber here looks gray, and you should probably have a pretty good understanding of why that is. White matter versus gray matter, this is gray because it's a non-myelinated fiber, right? Okay, well, where's my word slide at? Right over here. All right, so here's a good question you should answer, and this is really easy. What is the effector organ in a somatic voluntary pathway? That's just going to be skeletal muscle. And what are the effectors in an autonomic or visceral motor pathway? Smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, glands. Right. Okay. All right. So here is another overview, general overview of the autonomic nervous system in terms of control, control system architecture. And we've talked about this before in terms of muscle actions. All right. Tonic control describes a system where there is a single effector that can be adjusted or turned on or off. Like maybe if we have a faucet right here that just has cold water hooked up to it. And if you turn that valve on, what kind of water do you get out of that faucet that just has one valve on it? You get cold water. You could get a little bit or you could get a lot in a hurry, but it's always going to be what? One temperature, right? All right, so that's what tonic controls mean. That's what tonic control means. As opposed to antagonistic control. And remember, don't carry any bad connotations to that term antagonistic with you. Right? Antagonism is really what? Good or bad? Okay. It's really good. It's really good. All right? This describes a system with two effectors that work in opposition to each other. Each must be turned on or off or up and down. But and in your give me an example in your car. What are two mechanisms in your automobile that are antagonistic to each other? But you would never think of driving a car without them. The brake and the gas pedal, right? They have opposite effects. But because they work in opposition, you have precise control and balance. Now, going to that faucet analogy, okay, if you want water of a particular temperature, what do you need? Tonic control or antagonistic control? Antagonistic so that you can mix temperatures together to get the one that you want. All right, so do you think it would be a good idea to have tonic or antagonistic control over important body functions such as heart rate? Antagonistic control. So you would like to have a nervous system that speeds it up. You would also like to have a nervous system that slows it down. All right, and that gives you precise control and balance over your heart rate. And indeed, that's what we have. We have two antagonistic divisions. And you already told me they are the parasympathetic versus the sympathetic here. And you don't necessarily know which one is going to be stimulatory and which one is going to be inhibitory. The only thing you automatically know is that they're going to have what? Opposite effects. All right, so it's going to take a little bit of memorization perhaps to understand which one is doing what on what effector organ, but you should always know that they're going to be antagonistic. All right, so we're going to look at some pictures, but let's just look at an outline of these two nervous systems. The cell bodies are in, for the parasympathetic nervous system, the cell bodies are in the brainstem or spinal cord gray matter at S2, 3, and 4. So you know where brainstem is. Where's the brainstem? It's part of your brain, right? It's way up above your spinal cord. And what about S2, 3, and 4? We don't really think about these very much because we don't think that it has much to do with our body, but we see that it's an important outflow for the parasympathetic nervous system. What does S stand for? Sacrum. Yeah, sacrum. Okay? It's kind of right down there between the gluteus maximi. Way, way down there. So because parasympathetic outflow can only leave the brain or through the sacrum, we call it craniosacral outflow. Parasympathetic impulses can never leave the spinal cord through the cervical region or thoracic region or lumbar region. There are just no nerve fibers that leave the CNS at those levels. It's either the brain or the sacral region. And the ganglia, somebody had a good question about ganglia. Where are the ganglia for the parasympathetic neurons? They are usually right on the surface of the effector organ. So they go a long way to wherever that effector organ is. So the preganglionic fiber is long. The postganglionic fiber is really short because the ganglion is right there on the effector organ. It doesn't have to go very far. And indeed, many of the postganglionic fibers are microscopic in nature. Okay, so let's look at some targets that you should be aware of. So I have four right here. I'm not going to have you memorize everything in the body. So here are four important things. Parasympathetic stimulation of the heart does what to the heart? What does that little down arrow mean? Slows it down, decreases heart rate. All right? But look what it does to your digestive system. It increases. It's stimulatory to the digestive system. So again, parasympathetic innervation doesn't mean it's always inhibitory or always excitatory. You just have to know which one is which. And I'll try to give you a feel for how to figure that out in just a little bit. Okay, respiration, your breathing, your ventilation. Parasympathetic decreases your ventilatory rate. And pupil constriction. It means that your pupils do what? They get smaller. All right, because your iris constricts, your pupils get really, really small. All right, so if your heart rate decreases and your respiration decreases, what are you sort of doing?
Sitting there.
You're just sort of sitting there, and I don't want you to fall asleep because that's what the parasympathetic nervous system governs, a state when you're resting and digesting. So sometimes we call it the rest and digest, but don't fall asleep during lecture, even though you might be really thinking about the parasympathetic nervous system. Okay. The preganglionic neurotransmitter for all preganglionic fibers is acetylcholine, whether it's parasympathetic or sympathetic. And furthermore, the postganglionic neurotransmitter in the parasympathetic nervous system is also acetylcholine. Now that's interesting because you're going to see acetylcholine sometimes is inhibitory on the effector organ and is sometimes stimulatory on the effector organ. So you're going to have to come back and take a physiology class to figure out why that is. We can't get into that, but it's really interesting why one neurotransmitter like acetylcholine can have opposite effects on the body. All right, so just put that in the back of your mind for later on. All right, so here's a good question. Are the pre- and postganglionic fibers of the parasympathetic nervous system cholinergic or adrenergic? Okay, so cholinergic means it uses acetylcholine. Adrenergic means that it uses norepinephrine as a neurotransmitter. So adrenergic is norepi, cholinergic is acetylcholine. So how would you answer that question?
Cholinergic.
Yeah, they're cholinergic fibers. So we talk about them like that all the time. They're cholinergic fibers. All right, so how would you describe the difference between the pre- and postganglionic neurons of the parasympathetic nervous system? What are some differences?
Myelinated.
One is myelinated. Which one?
The pre.
The pre is myelinated, and the post is?
Non-myelinated.
Let's see if I got another picture. Ah, close. I don't have a very good picture. All right. Now, what's another? Oh, here. This is it right here. Okay. What's another difference between the preganglionic and postganglionic fiber? The speed of conduction. That's right. The preganglionic fiber is a lot faster because it is myelinated. What about the length?
One is longer.
Which one? The preganglionic. Okay. And which one uses norepinephrine as a neurotransmitter? Neither of them. Aha, trick question. Okay, they all use, because both fibers are what? Both fibers, you could say, use acetylcholine. But what's another way of saying it real quickly? Both fibers are cholinergic, right? Both fibers are cholinergic. Okay. So that's a pretty good view of the parasympathetic nervous system. So the parasympathetic, just to recapitulate again, is the rest and digest autonomic nervous system. All right. The sympathetic, on the other hand, is not responsible for rest and digest. This is what we call the fight or flight nervous system. Right? Whenever you're presented with a life-threatening circumstance, right, that's the kind of nervous system that gets stimulated. And what's the effect on... Let's look at the parasympathetic nervous system. So here is the guide to the parasympathetic nervous system. What is the sympathetic response on the heart going to be?
Increase
heart rate. What about digestion?
Decrease.
What about respiration?
Increase,
right? Because when you're presented with a life-threatening situation, the last thing your body is concerned with at that moment is digestion of food. What is your body interested in? Maintaining blood pressure and perfusion of muscle so that you can deal with that perceived threat. All right? Increase ventilatory response so that you can get oxygen into your body so those mitochondria can be pumping out a lot of ATP to work those muscles to deal with that life-threatening situation. And instead of pupil constriction, their pupils are going to dilate because you want to get a lot of information into your eyes so that you can perceive your environment and deal with those threats that are coming at you, right? So we call that pupil dilation. That's due to the sympathetic nervous system. All right, well, let's look at some of the neuroanatomy of the sympathetic nervous system. The cell bodies are in the spinal cord gray matter from T1 through L2. What does that mean? What's T1? That's thoracic 1, and L2 is lumbar number 2. So this is the only way for sympathetic impulses to leave your central nervous system, from T1 to L2. Thus, we say the sympathetic nervous system has thoracolumbar outflow. Thoracolumbar. But parasympathetic is what? Contrast that with the parasympathetic. It is craniosacral. A little strange, but that's how things have evolved. Okay. So sympathetic outflow must also pass through the sympathetic chain, which is lateral to the vertebral bodies of the vertebral column. This is something that the parasympathetic nervous system doesn't have. Okay. So let's see if we can find a picture. Yeah, here's a picture right here. So here is, right, here's the brain. This is where the parasympathetics are going to come out of, and parasympathetics down over here at the sacrum. But between T1 and L2, we have sympathetic outflow, right? So sympathetic impulses leave on these ventral roots, and they have to go through this structure right here. Well, this kind of looks like a little auxiliary spinal cord, and it is, for the sympathetic nervous system. So somatic nerves don't go through the sympathetic chain ganglia, only sympathetic outflow. And there's going to be one on the other side of the spinal cord as well. Okay, so these are the sympathetic chain ganglia. Each one of these little bulges right here is a ganglia, and the ganglia are interconnected with each other. So sometimes sympathetic signals will enter, and then they can leave at that same level, or they can go up a couple divisions, or they can even go down a number of different divisions before leaving the sympathetic chain ganglia. Okay, so here are some ganglia right here. The ganglia are far away from the target organs. Why are the ganglia far away from the target organs? Because where are they located? They're located right along either side of the vertebral column. All right, so they're really close to the spinal cord. So that also should tell you that the preganglionic fiber is what length? Long or short? It's short, because the sympathetic chain are right there by the spinal cord on either side. All right. Sometimes fibers will pass right through the sympathetic chain ganglia and go to another ganglia someplace. But remember, how many nerves does it take for autonomic outflow to get from central nervous system to effector organ? Two. It's always going to be two. So there's got to be a ganglia someplace in between, right? And if the ganglia is not in the sympathetic chain, it's in a ganglion someplace else that's still pretty close to the spinal cord. We call these the collateral or prevertebral ganglia. And prevertebral just means in front of the vertebral column. Right, or in front of, or anterior to the vertebral column. So if we look at a picture of that, right, so here we see the sympathetic chain, but we also see ganglia in different parts of the body. These are what we call collateral ganglia. So sympathetic fibers might pass right through the sympathetic chain and synapse in a collateral ganglion someplace, and then the postganglionic fiber goes the rest of the way to the effector organ. All right, so all right, when you see a slide like this that looks a little complicated, all right, what should you look for? What are you kind of seeing when you see this picture right here? Are you going to think somatic or autonomic nervous system? Autonomic. Okay, autonomic nervous system. And should you be thinking parasympathetic or sympathetic nervous system? And right away, right, without looking at a lot of detail, we see it is what? Thoracolumbar. And so this is sympathetic outflow to effector organs. All right, then we got to layer in some of these other details. All right, this solid colored line represents a certain kind of fiber compared to the dotted line. What are different ways that we could think about this solid colored line versus this dotted line right here? Pre and post fibers, right? So here is the pre. And why is it solid colored? Well, because we want to show a difference, but what would the difference be? It's myelinated, and the dotted line fibers, the postganglionic fibers, again, are slow. They're non-myelinated. Okay. All right, and we said that the neurotransmitter within any autonomic ganglia is acetylcholine. But now, the neurotransmitter at the effector organ for the sympathetic nervous system is not going to be acetylcholine anymore. It's going to be norepinephrine. Because, don't forget, on the heart right here, acetylcholine is going to slow it down. Norepinephrine is going to have the opposite effect, or speed it up, right? Fight or flight response. Okay. Okay. All right, so let's just kind of compare and contrast in an everyday kind of scenario. Question?
Are those, like, the thoracic and the bottom, are those connecting to two different ganglia?
Right here? You know, they can, because the sympathetic nervous system is characterized by a wide divergence of signals, so that when your sympathetic nervous system gets stimulated, it has major effects all over the body. So a single preganglionic fiber can synapse in many different ganglia, so that that response is very widespread in your body.
So
it can.
It is
a systemic response, and we're going to look at an adaptation of the sympathetic nervous system that even makes it more systemic. And that has to do with the adrenal medulla, okay, when we get to that one. All right, so let's just think for a second. Well, you got a test coming up in a couple weeks, right? So you still got some time to study for this test. So you didn't have to call in from work and say, I got to stay home and study. Tonight you could work, right? You could go into work. But let's just say, because it's raining tonight, you're not going to have a lot of customers in the store. All right, so you get to work this afternoon, and there's nobody there. And so what can you do? So you can study, yeah, you can pull your book out, right? You can do your homework, and you can do the mock practicum, right? Study for the practicum coming up, and do your homework, your pre-lecture reading assignments and everything, right? Check your answer keys out. So how are you feeling right now?
Relaxed.
You're relaxed. Well, you're getting paid because you're at work, plus you're studying, you're right, you're going to get a good grade on the next test. You know, all the bases are covered. That's really, really nice, right? And so you're working away, and now it's 11 o'clock, and you only had like two or three customers. So is it hard to balance the cash register out, or is it difficult? You have to do a lot of calculations? No, it's really trivial, right? So all your receipts match up with the money that came in, right? So you don't have to put in a $20 bill because you gave somebody too much change or anything. So how are you feeling? Yeah, you got all your homework done, you studied a lot, the cash register is matching up just fine. Time to go home, that's always a good thing, right? All right, so you pack up your books and you walk to the door, and just as you're about ready to push the door out, all of a sudden the lights go dark because of the thunderstorm, right? So the lights in the neighborhood go dark. So you step outside, and you put a key in the door, and you lock the door, and you start walking, okay, to your car, and then you realize that they were doing some work on the parking lot that day, and you had to park out in the neighborhood someplace, two blocks away. Maybe it was like San Francisco or someplace where you had no place to park. All right, so now you have to start walking to your car in the dark, okay, that's parked really far away. Now how are you feeling? A little scared. What about your heart rate? It's increasing. What about your respiratory rate? It's increasing. Blood flow to muscles is increasing. But you want to go home, so you start walking to your car. You get about halfway to your car, and then all of a sudden, you hear some footsteps behind you. Click, click, click. Now how are your pupils? Are they constricted? They're dilated, and your heart rate is elevated, and you're sweating, and your heart rate and your ventilatory rate is elevated. So now what nervous system is kind of taking over? It went from parasympathetic, when everything was nice and control, into sympathetic nervous system, right? So now you're dealing with the potentially stressful situation, right? So you speed up a little bit, get to your car, and just as you get to your car, okay, you hear my voice saying, oh, what are you doing out here this late at night? Now what's your nervous system? What nervous system is working again? Now you're relieved, your parasympathetic nervous system, right, is kind of taken over again, and you can drive home and be prepared for class the next day. Okay? So that's how you maybe want to compare the sympathetic nervous system with the parasympathetic nervous system. And, for instance, if you're going to go see a movie this weekend or last weekend, what did you pay those big bucks to see? Did you go see a movie that stimulated your parasympathetic nervous system or your sympathetic nervous system? Yeah, you're sympathetic, right? You're not going to pay $20 to go get your pupils constricted. When you're watching that movie, what about your pupils? You're dilated, right? You're perspiring, your heart rate, your respiratory rate is increased, right? You're stimulating that sympathetic nervous system. And I'm sure, like Steven Spielberg and George Lucas and all these people pay really big bucks to anatomists and physiologists to figure out what kind of techniques in cinema photography work to stimulate specifically the sympathetic nervous system, right? Okay. All right. So don't forget, most postganglionics use norepinephrine as a neurotransmitter. But we can find a couple examples of acetylcholine. Might have to just keep an open mind about that. All right, so how would you describe the difference between the pre- and postganglionic neurons of the sympathetic nervous system? Sympathetic, the pre and post. The pre is always going to be myelinated, okay? But in terms of length now, they're short. The postganglionic fiber is long and non-myelinated. Well, the preganglionic fiber, what kind of neurotransmitter? Yeah, but is it cholinergic or adrenergic? It's a cholinergic fiber, and the postganglionic fiber is an adrenergic fiber because it's releasing norepinephrine. All right, so here are some other things that we have to become a little bit aware of in terms of the sympathetic nervous system. The preganglionic sympathetic fiber enters the sympathetic chain, right? These are the little auxiliary spinal cords on either side of the vertebral column, via the white ramus communicans, or communicantes, from the ventral ramus of the spinal cord. The postganglionic sympathetic fiber leaves the sympathetic chain via the gray ramus communicantes to the ventral ramus of the spinal nerve, or if it's just going to pass right through, it goes through another nerve that sometimes we lose track of in anatomy. We call it a splanchnic nerve. Okay, so I'll show you where some of these things are. Yeah, splanchnic nerve. Okay. So here we see the spinal cord, and here's the sympathetic chain ganglia, and there's going to be, of course, one over here. And this right here is the dorsal root. All right, so here we see the dorsal root up over here. Here's the ventral root. The ventral root is motor. This is for outflow. So the preganglionic fiber is going to leave the spinal nerve and actually enter, remember, this is what we call the ventral ramus. This is the dorsal ramus right here from last time. So the myelinated sympathetic fiber is going to enter the sympathetic chain via this ramus communicantes, and what color does it look like? White. It's white because it's myelinated. So this is how sympathetic nerves enter the sympathetic chain. Okay, and if its synapse is here, right, then the postganglionic fiber is going to re-enter the spinal nerve, and that color of that nerve right there should actually look a little gray. I don't know what color it really is. What color is it, just for fun? It is sort of grayish. All right, so that's the gray ramus communicantes, because what can you tell me about axons in this pathway right here? They're non-myelinated, right? But they're still sympathetic. They re-enter the spinal nerve and then follow wherever the spinal nerve goes to the particular effector organ. All right, so here's the white ramus communicantes, here's the gray ramus, and we can have synapses in here, but don't forget, there can be the preganglionic fiber entering the sympathetic chain. It might not synapse here. It might actually go down a couple divisions or go up a couple divisions, or it can actually pass right through the sympathetic chain ganglia and enter something that we call a splanchnic nerve. So these are splanchnic nerves. You have three main splanchnic nerves. It's not important for me, for you to know which names those splanchnic nerves are, you should just automatically know that when there's a nerve going from the sympathetic chain to a collateral ganglion someplace, that's going to be a splanchnic of some kind. Okay, but they're really easy to memorize. There's only three major branches. Right? So splanchnic nerves going to some collateral ganglion someplace else. Okay, and another name for a collateral ganglia is a prevertebral ganglion. All right, so let's look at this right here. So we see a nerve cell body in the lateral horn of the gray matter. So this should give you a clue as to what kind of autonomic outflow this is. Is it parasympathetic or sympathetic? Okay, you're right, this is sympathetic. All right, because this also looks like a thoracolumbar, which is sympathetic. So only in that from T1 to L2 do you have this lateral horn right here. In the cervical region, you don't have a lateral horn. Why don't you have a lateral horn in the cervical region? Because there's no sympathetic outflow in that region. Or in the lower levels of the lumbar, there's no lateral horn in the gray matter of the spinal cord because there's no sympathetic outflow there either. Right, so only from T1 to L2 do we have these lateral horns. Right, so here is that motor neuron going through the ventral root, going through the white ramus communicantes into the sympathetic chain, and in this particular case you can see it going up, arising a level where it synapses, and now here is the postganglionic fiber leaving the sympathetic chain via the gray ramus communicantes into that spinal nerve, and it's going to go to wherever, right, it's going to go to. Maybe on the surface of your skin or to a blood vessel someplace. Okay, so this is one particular scheme that can happen. All right, again, on this slide, we see a nerve connecting the sympathetic chain with the prevertebral ganglia. What do we call any kind of nerve that's interconnecting the sympathetic chain ganglia with a collateral ganglia or a prevertebral ganglion? Okay, we're going to call that a splanchnic nerve. A splanchnic nerve. Splanchnic. So here's a splanchnic nerve. So a splanchnic nerve is carrying sympathetic signals from the sympathetic chain to a collateral ganglia someplace. Okay, so here's another example. Innervation to a salivary gland. Where do you have salivary glands? Way up in your head someplace. Okay, but look, where does the sympathetic outflow leave your body? From T1 through T4. All right, so it comes through the white ramus communicantes, arises as far as it can go in the sympathetic chain, all right, and it synapses in the sympathetic chain. So here's the postganglionic fiber, which goes all the way to the salivary gland in the mouth via nerves that go to the mouth. Okay. All right, so this just shows how sympathetic fibers can go through the sympathetic chain. Okay, here is a sympathetic innervation to digestive organs. T5 to L2, leave the ventral root into the spinal nerve, the white ramus communicantes, passes right through the sympathetic chain, goes to a collateral ganglia someplace. So what do we call this connection between the sympathetic chain and the collateral ganglia? That's a splanchnic nerve where it synapses. What's the neurotransmitter right here in this prevertebral ganglia? Or acetylcholine that sends nerve impulses down to the small intestine, and the neurotransmitter here is going to be norepinephrine. What's the effect of norepinephrine on the digestive system? Increase or decrease digestion? It decreases, right? Decreases motility and digestion. Okay. So, you know what is, I think, going to be really helpful for you to do is to draw for yourself on a piece of paper what sympathetic outflow looks like. All right, so I'll just draw this on the board and show you how it'd be good for you to do that. And then I'll do it really fast. Actually, we could have a race to see. All right, so here we got, what do we got right there? What's that? That's spinal cord. All right, and then there's that lateral horn, right? There's a central canal. You got that lateral horn where? T1 through L2, because that's where sympathetic outflow is. All right, so here's a cell body. And where's it going to go? Is it going to come up over here? Because that's a dorsal root, that's for afferent signals. It's going to leave the ventral root right here. All right, so that motor neuron is going to leave the ventral root. Okay, and now I'm going to stop drawing really pretty. I'm going to just be more diagrammatic. So here, what do we got right here? So here we got a fiber that comes in. All right, so signals are entering this thing right here. What's that? So remember, these are on either side of the spinal cord. This thing right here is the sympathetic chain ganglion. What is this? This is the ventral root. This right here is the spinal nerve. And what did we call this communications between the spinal nerve and the sympathetic chain ganglia? And is it white or gray? It's white. So this thing right here is the white ramus communicantes, right? Because that contains the preganglionic fiber. And let's just say its synapse is right here at this level, because I don't want to like draw out or into the board. So here is the cell body of the postganglionic fiber, leaves the sympathetic chain, and it goes back into the spinal nerve. And where does it go? Let's just say it goes, I don't know, someplace out over here. All right, so signals are what now? Leaving the sympathetic chain. What do we call this thing? The gray ramus communicantes. So we got spinal nerve. All right, then we got a nerve that goes to the back and a nerve that goes to the front. So this is going to be the... Oh, I don't want to do a DO. I'll do a DR, but that means dorsal root. How about DRA? That stands for?
Dorsal.
Here is DR. Here is DRG, dorsal root ganglia. Here's dorsal root. So this is the dorsal ramus going to everything behind the spinal cord. What is this thing going to be? This is the ventral ramus going to everything in anterior to the spinal cord. Oh, I don't know. I guess that's it. Sympathetic chain. Oh, we could do one last thing. Sometimes, so this right here, this is the preganglionic fiber. Sometimes this preganglionic fiber, I'll draw it a different color. Sometimes the preganglionic fiber comes into the sympathetic chain and it goes to another place. So this is not a sympathetic chain ganglia. This is what? This is a prevertebral, because it's usually located in front of the spinal cord. Okay. So what do we call this thing here? This is a SPN, because I don't want to use spinal nerve. This is what? A splanchnic nerve. And then this is going to go to, right, your effector organ. Goes to an effector organ. Okay, so what did we say here? Lateral horn, ventral root, spinal nerve. What's the function of a spinal nerve? It starts with an M, but it's motor and sensory, afferent and efferent, which is what we call mixed. So this spinal nerve is mixed, right? Because this is afferent, this is efferent, so this is mixed. Mixed right here. So here we have a motor sympathetic going through the white ramus communicantes into the sympathetic chain. And it can, don't forget, it can go up a level, go down a level, or it can pass right through, or it can even go back into the spinal nerve if this is the postganglionic fiber going to some effector organ. If it goes to a prevertebral ganglia, that's via a splanchnic nerve. And don't forget, this nerve right here is cholinergic, and this one is adrenergic. Okay, so what's the neurotransmitter right here? Acetylcholine, and the neurotransmitter here is norepinephrine, right? That's norepinephrine. Okay. So does that look really complicated? You're going to have to draw it out a couple times. Dorsal root? Dorsal root ganglion? Dorsal ramus. Because don't forget, you have a spinal nerve and it's going to bifurcate, right? Bifurcates to the anterior part of the body or the posterior part of the body. All right, so what's the function of dorsal root? These are good questions. Sensory. What's the function of ventral root?
Motor.
Motor. Only?
No, both.
Both what? A root.
Root.
Never mixed. Never mixed. So ventral root is motor. Ventral root, a dorsal root, always sensory. Spinal nerve, that's mixed. Dorsal ramus is always going to be mixed. The ventral ramus is going to be mixed. All right, so I guess I'll write that right here. Mixed. Mixed. Okay. So what's the difference between a root and a ramus? In terms of function, a ramus is always mixed, and a root is never mixed. Okay, so that's sort of what you should have in your mind for that. Okay. All right. Well, maybe let's draw this out again, really fast. Okay. So what do we got right here? Spinal cord. All right, and we got this thing. We got dorsal root. We got a bump right here. Dorsal root ganglia coming down like this. So this is the ventral root. This is the spinal nerve. All right, and then it can branch like this. So this is the dorsal ramus. This is the ventral ramus. But now let's layer in some sympathetic outflow to this. So how does that sympathetic outflow go? It goes into this thing right here. This is the... Oh, you want to do the white ramus first? All right, so white ramus communicantes. But what is the circle? That's the sympathetic chain ganglia. And if it synapses right here, right, cell body, and it comes back out this way, what is this? This is a gray ramus communicantes, gray ramus communicantes. But if it passes right through to this structure right here, what's that? That's a splanchnic nerve. And this is the prevertebral ganglia. All right, so this is still the preganglionic fiber, and then this is the postganglionic fiber. Okay. So how many nerves for autonomic outflow to go from central nervous system to effector organ?
Two.
It's always two, right? The preganglionic and then the postganglionic. And the preganglionic, even if it's parasympathetic, or no matter if it's parasympathetic or sympathetic, it gets complicated sometimes. Okay, the preganglionic fiber, irrespective if it's sympathetic or parasympathetic, what kind of fiber is it in terms of neurotransmitter? What's the best way to say? It is cholinergic. All right? But the postganglionic fiber for the sympathetic nervous system is going to be?
Adrenergic.
Right, it's going to be adrenergic. Nonetheless, these are all chemical synapses right here. Okay. I got one last thing to tell you about before we take a break, but I'll say it again next time. There is a special place. Well, we said that sympathetic outflow is characterized by divergence, where sympathetic outflow, even though it leaves your spinal cord from T1 through L2, it stimulates your whole body, all right, so that you can respond to stressful situations. There's another reason why that is true. Okay, and it has to do with this system right here. So notice that we have lateral horn. Here's a preganglionic fiber going through the white ramus communicantes, passing right through the sympathetic chain ganglia into a splanchnic nerve, and it goes all the way to the adrenal medulla. And the adrenal medulla is an organ that sits right on top of your kidneys. We haven't really looked at that yet, but we're going to look at it. And organs have two different parts, all right? There could be stuff right on the surface, and there can be different stuff on the inside. Where did you see an organ that had certain kind of stuff on the outside but different stuff on the inside?
Brain.
Yeah, brain, because it's gray matter on the cortex and mostly white matter deep inside. But what about bone? How did we break bone down? Into cortex versus medulla. Cortical bone versus medullary bone, or even the medullary cavity, is a lot different. So the medulla of an organ is the deep part. The cortex is the superficial part. Any organ is that way. The cortex is the superficial part. So can you see that this adrenal gland has a cortex and a medulla? Yeah, because they're nice different colors. All right, but they have different kinds of cells. Inside the medulla, there are cells that are modified postganglionic fibers. They don't send electrical impulses anywhere, but when they receive information from this one right here, so this fiber right here where I have the cursor right here, what kind of fiber is that? That's sympathetic preganglionic, right? That's a sympathetic preganglionic fiber, and it's going to synapse on these little circles right here. These are what we call chromaffin cells, and in most parts of the sympathetic nervous system, these would be the beginnings of the postganglionic fiber. But notice, they don't send axons anywhere. They're just sitting in the adrenal medulla. And when they're stimulated by the preganglionic fiber, they automatically release norepinephrine and also epinephrine, primarily epinephrine. So in this particular case, these cells don't send electrical impulses, so we don't really consider these neurons, but they're modified neurons. They release these signaling molecules that then are picked up by a capillary that's in the adrenal medulla. And where does epinephrine and norepinephrine go now? Wherever the blood goes, which is where? Everywhere. So now your circulatory system is carrying this very strong sympathetic signal everywhere in your body, producing sympathetic effects, increasing heart rate, decreasing digestion, right, dilating pupils, etc., etc. Increasing blood flow to muscles so that you can fly or run away, okay, one or the other. So in this particular case, epinephrine and norepinephrine, we don't really call these neurotransmitters because they're not affecting a neuron. They're acting like a chemical that is transported in the blood. And we haven't learned a definition of that kind of signaling molecule yet. All right, but that is a classical definition of a hormone. It's a signaling molecule that gets picked up by the circulatory system and distributed throughout your whole body. So in this particular case, this is a good example of epinephrine and norepinephrine acting as what we call a neurohormone. It has characteristics of neurotransmitter, but it also has characteristics of being a hormone. So this is such an important point that I need to go over it a couple times. So I'm going to start here next time. All right, remind me to start here next time. And again, thanks for filling out those questionnaires and things.